Translation this way, being purified by ritualistic sacrifices, the heart of Maharaj Bharat was completely uncontaminated with devotional service under Vasudeva. Lord Krishna increased day by day. Lord Krishna, the son of Vasudeva, is the original personality of God, he had manifest as the Paramatma as well as the impersonal Brahman. Yogis meditate upon the localized Paramatma, situated in their hearts, can his worship the impersonal Brahman as the supreme absolute truth and devotees worship Vasudeva, the supreme personality of God, whose transcendental body is described in the Shastras. His body is decorated with the tree Vatsa, the coast of a jewel, and a flower garden, and his hands hold a conch shell disc, club, and lotus flower. Devotees like Narada always think of him within their hearts. Purport, Lord Vasudeva, Sri Krishna, the son of Vasudeva, is the supreme personality of Godhead. He is manifest within the hearts of yogis and his Paramatma feature, and he's worthy of the same person, Brahman, by the Jnanis. The Paramatma feature is described in the Shastras as having four hands holding this conch shell, lotus flower, and club, as confirmed in Srimad Bhagavatam. Paramatma is situated in the heart of all living beings. He has four hands which hold four symbolic weapons. All devotees who think of the Paramatma within the heart worship the Supreme Personality of God as the temple deity. They also understand the impersonal teachings of the Lord and his bodily rays, the Brahmana cultures. Text 8. Destiny fixed the time for Mahabharata's enjoyment of material opulence at 1,000 times. 10,000 years. That's what, a million? When that period was finished, he retired from family life and divided the wealth he had received from his forefathers among his sons. He left his parental home, the residence of opulence, and started for Kulaha Ashram, which is situated in Haridwar. The Shalagram Srila Saurabh came there. Purport, according to the law of Daya Bhak, when one inherits a state, he must hand it over to the next generation. Bharat Maharaj did this properly. First, he enjoyed his paternal property for 1,000 times 10,000 years. At the time of his retirement, he divided this property among his sons and left for Kulaha Ashram. At Kulaha Ashram, the Supreme Personality of Godhead Hari out of his transcendental affection for his devotee. Becomes visible to his devotee, satisfying his devotee's desire. Purport, the Lord always exists in different transcendental forms, as stated in Brahma Samhita. The Lord is situated as himself. Lord Krishna is the Supreme Personality of God, and he is accompanied by his extensions like Lord Brahma, Balaji, Sankarshan, Narayan, Mahavishnu, and so forth. The devotees worship all these forms according to their liking, and the Lord, out of his affection, presents himself as Archa Vigraha. He sometimes presents himself personally for the devotee out of certification or affection. A devotee is always fully surrendered under the loving service of the Lord, and the Lord is visible to the devotee according to the devotee's desires. He may be present in the form of Lord Rama, Lord Krishna, Lord Narasimhadev, and so on. Such is the exchange of love between the Lord and his devotees. In Kulaha Ashram, the Gandaki River, which is the best of all rivers, the Shalagram Srila, the marble pebbles, purify all these places. On each and every marble petal, up and down, circles are like navels are visible. Purport, Shalagram Srila is for the pebbles that appear like stones with circles marked up and down. These are available on the river known as Gandaki Nadi. Wherever the waters of this river flow, the place becomes a sanctified. In the garden of Kulaha Ashram, Maharaj Bharat lived alone and collected a variety of flowers, twigs, and tulsi leaves. He also collected the water of the Gandaki River as well as various roots, and bulbs. With these, he offered food to the Supreme Personality of Godhead Vasudeva and worshipped him. He remained satisfied. In this way, his heart was completely uncontaminated, and he did not have the least desire for material enjoyment. All material desires vanished. In this steady position, he felt fully satisfied, full satisfaction, and was situated in devotional service. Therefore, everyone is searching after peace of mind. This is obtainable only when one is completely free from the desire for material sense gratification as engaged in the devotional service of the Lord, as stated in Bhagavad Gita, Patram Pushpam Phalam Tayam Yome Bhakya Prachati. Worship of the Lord is not at all expensive. One can offer the Lord a leaf, a flower, a little fruit, and some water. The Supreme Lord accepts these offerings when they are offered with love and devotion. In this way, one can become freed from material desires. As long as one maintains material desires, he cannot be happy. As soon as one engages in devotional service, the Lord's mind is purified of all material desires, then one becomes fully satisfied. The supreme occupation for all humanity is that by which men can attain to devotional loving service under the transcendental Lord. Such devotional service must be unmotivated and uninterrupted in order to completely satisfy the self. By rendering devotional service under the personality of Godhead, Sri Krishna, one immediately acquires causeless knowledge and detachment from the world. These are the instructions given in Srimad Bhagavatam, the Supreme Vedic Literature. One may not be able to go to Kulaha Ashram, but wherever one is, one can happily render devotional service to the Lord by adopting the processes mentioned above. So, this section relates to the activities of Bharat when he retired. So the previous verses discussed how he performs his duties and his sacrifices, including animal sacrifices, for the prosperity of his kingdom. And at the same time, he understood that all this was dedicated to the Supreme Lord. So it did not interfere with his devotion. And in these verses now, it's described how he renounced all of that. Affection for the Lord increased, and simultaneously his attraction for carrying out this life decreased. So after many years of doing this, then he renounced his kingdom and went up into the Himalayas and Kulaha Ashram on the Gandaki River, which is present in Nepal. And what did he do there? describes, of course, that he acted as a vanaprastha. And the nature of the vanaprastha is to live very simply in the forest and survive on the roots and fruits. At the same time, worshipping the Supreme Lord. So this is exactly what he did. He was completely absorbed in that worship. And described how in this way all material attachment desires disappeared and his devotion became very advanced. So in this way he attained a very high position due to the execution of devotional service. So here we find a great emphasis upon the bhakti aspect. His father Rishabhadev visibly was more a renunciate than being a puppet root. Bharat Maharaj acted more traditionally as a retired king and practiced vanaprastha life and at the same time worshiped the Supreme Lord. So the idea is that in spite of the fact that he went for many thousands of years carrying out his duties of a king, this did not interfere with his practice of devotion. So that when he retired, he found no difficulty in fully dedicating himself to the Supreme Lord and worshipping the Lord, occupying himself all day with that worship. In spite of the fact that when he was a king, he was occupied with so many kingly duties, material duties. So, in other words, devotional service can be practiced in any situation. One does not have to completely give up everything in order to practice. So he sets a good example of that. And due to his practice, when he retired, then he was quite advanced. So later describes that he actually was able to see the Lord because of his advanced devotion, which means he was on the level of Baba. In spite of being a king, he was able to advance to this very, very great position of Baba stage. So therefore, one should not be discouraged by the fact that one may be distracted from devotion by so many material duties. Bharat Maharaj is a good example of that. Of course, we understand later on he deviated a little from that devotion, but we cannot criticize him for his great advancement. So up to this point, where he began his practice, he did everything very nicely. He did his kingly duties very nicely. He did his worship nicely in such a way that he advanced so that when he retired, he could fully dedicate himself to the Supreme Lord without difficulty and with no hankering for material things. So therefore, it described that all this desire for material things decreased. It created no problem for him at all. It simply decreased because his attachment had reached a quite advanced stage. So if one is a neophyte or a beginner, then material desires are quite prominent and one's attraction to devotion is less. So this will create a problem because one will have to struggle with material desires. So the neophyte devotee is, one of the descriptions of him is he Vishaya Sangra, or war with material sense objects. He must struggle to try to pull himself away from material enjoyment. Why? Because his attachment to Krishna is less. When a person advances and devotion becomes stronger, then automatically those desires will become less. So at a certain stage, the attraction to Krishna is more and the attraction to material things becomes less. So therefore it's not a struggle, even though one is not perfect yet. Still, because of the prominence of attraction to Krishna, the material desires being less do not create much of a problem. It is like an enemy. The enemy may be strong by having thousands of soldiers, and maybe one has 100 soldiers against 1,000 and one is weak. But one is 1,000 soldiers and 100 soldiers on the side, then one is no problem. One has to worry about the 100 soldiers. So in that way, the stronger the bhakti becomes, the less problem material desires are, even they're there. So after nishtha and rutsya sakti, this means that the desire for the Supreme Lord is much stronger, and the desire for enjoyment becomes much, much weaker as one progresses. And so a bhava is almost gone. So that was the position of Bharat by practicing his grihastha life in the kingdom and ruling the kingdom as a kshatriya. He was able to advance through bhakti, simultaneously doing his varnashrama duties. He advanced through bhakti, and so that when he retired, he very quickly came to the state of bhava. So therefore it was not difficult for him to practice this life of complete absorption in the Lord's activities. Because naturally, the material desires had become very, very little by that time. So it was no difficulty for him to do so. We find similarly in the example in other great kings also, they were able to do this without difficulty at all, because of their strong attraction to the Lord and constantly their very little attachment to the material world. There are examples, of course, of others who were not sadhakas at all, like the Pandavas. They're nityasiddhas, so we cannot put them in the same category. But this is actually Bharat, who is a sadhaka. And he was advancing through bhakti as a jiva, and then attained a high position. In the case of nityasiddhas, like the Pandavas and others, they were also kings, and then later they renounced the kingdom, whatever. They were actually in prema already, so there was no question of any material desires appearing at any time. There was no danger at any time. And there was no problem in practicing vanaprastha life and giving up the kingdom or whatever, because they're completely attached to the Lord by their very nature. So that they only go through the ashramas as a matter of teaching others, that's all. So there's no question of material attachment to them at all. In the case of Bharat, however, he was a sadhaka. We know, of course, that Rishabhadev was Supreme Lord himself. So again, there was no question of sadhana or struggling with material energy at all. But he had a certain purpose to teach complete rejection of material things and how dangerous that could be for spiritual advancement. So he became an example of renunciation by extreme measures. So the case of Bharat is he's a sadhaka, and his story has a good lesson because he did advance to this high stage. At the same time, he had a problem later on. So, in spite of the fact that one may be very advanced, there is the possibility of problems even at that stage. That means within the bhava stage. After he had a vision of Vishnu, he actually had darshan of Vishnu. But still, in that position, he fell from his position as a neglected worship of the Lord. So even in bhava state, there is the possibility of problem. In prema, then there is no possibility. In prema, the anartas, the obstacles, whatever, are completely annihilated, and devotion to the Lord 100%. So there is no question of falling from that position in prema. So we have examples of that in like the Haridas Thakur or someone like that. So many temptations can be there, but there's no effect upon him at all. He's completely absorbed in chanting the Lord's name and serving the Supreme Lord. So there's no possibility at that stage. However, in the bhava stage, getting to prema, this before prema, then there is some possibility even there. What to speak of lower stages? However, the starting from nishtha onwards, that it's less likely. Some sort of fall is less likely at that stage because attraction to the Lord becomes more prominent than attraction to material energy at the stage of nishtha after that. Before that, then it's more likely that one can deviate and have a struggle with material objects because the attraction to material things is stronger, and the attraction to Krishna is less. It's the minority, it's less than 50%. So therefore, there can be a problem, more problem there. So as one advances, therefore the likelihood of problem becomes less and less and less, and it's less likely of bhava, and then not possible, right? So that is the sequence. So as long as we're in the material world, therefore, unless we attain prema, there is some possibility of problems from the material world. It is possible. With prema, no. So the lesson we have to learn from that is that we always have to protect our devotion and try to increase that devotion. That is the only way in which we can guarantee less attraction to maya. So that is illustrated here by the fact that because he was so absorbed in worshipping the Lord, the attraction to material things decreased and decreased automatically for him. So therefore, to safeguard yourself from material attraction, the solution is engagement in the process of bhakti. That is the solution. That, of course, was the conclusion of Vrishabhadeva in his final teaching. So one has to become completely detached from the material world. The process of doing that is absorption and service to the Supreme Lord, bhakti to the Supreme Lord. So basically, he's simply illustrating what Vrishabhadeva taught also. So as the Vrishabhadeva's eldest son, he also observed those instructions very nicely and then put them into practice very nicely in his life.
When the scheme goes to part, what about association? It just goes in.
Well, that is the nature of the vanaprastha. One leaves association. This, of course, doesn't mean that one has to leave all association. Particularly, one has to leave one's own family members. So if in the forest one needs sages, that is not such a problem. The main idea is one should not be dependent upon family members and the comforts of family life. So therefore, one lives in the forest and maybe makes a little hut there and sleeps on the ground and goes in the forest and picks the berries and the fruits and the roots and survives on that. So he doesn't become attached to eating process or anything like that. And at the same time, he carries out some daily activities, austerities, etc. Traditionally, the vanaprastha is a time of tapas. So one of the tapas is to isolate oneself from others. And the difference between that and sannyasa is not tapas, but is the result of tapas, and that is, in sannyasa, then one can completely dedicate oneself to the Supreme Lord. So the tapas is necessary because it must counteract the attractions in family life. However, by doing bhakti, one more or less surpasses this, so that at any stage one can advance. And if one takes vanaprastha already, one could be quite advanced in terms of bhakti. So one can completely dedicate oneself in the vanaprastha stage to the Lord without having to take sannyas first.
Process sadhu sangha and then bhajan kriya and so on. So how do you compare this scale with the neophyte and madhyamadhikari and uttamadhikari?
Well, it depends on the definitions we give to these. Mm-hmm. What is a neophyte? Or what is a kanishta?
Like the definition that you were explaining here, that neophyte still has a struggle with these senses. In that case, then how do we compare them with this game?
It depends on what definition you want to use for neophyte and advanced or whatever. So there are several definitions, like the Kanishta, Madhyama, and Uttama. So in the Bhagavatam, the Kanishta is one who doesn't appreciate devotees, and he only sees the Lord in the temple. So in that case, he's not really a devotee. And whereas the Madhyama appreciates devotee association and, takes association and serves higher devotees, etc. So that person actually is the real devotee. So when we go Shraddha, Bhajana Kriya, Sadhu Sangha, Bhajana Kriya, we're getting Sadhu Sangha and Bhajana Kriya, that means actually we're entering into a Majjhima stage right there. However, that Majjhima stage continues all the way into Bhava, it appears. And then the Uttama stage is one sees the Lord everywhere. So, of course, one sees the Lord in Bhava also, but it is not constant. That's only in Prema one sees the Lord at all times. So at a very high stage of Bhava, and then in Prema one can say the Uttama Adhikari manifests. And that definition given later in the 11th canto of Bhagavatam. The other definition given in Nectar Devotion is restricted to Vaidhi Sadhana Bhakti. And the Kanishka there is defined as one who does not have knowledge of the scripture and his faith is weak and he can get convinced by others. Whereas the Madhyama is one who still doesn't have sufficient knowledge, so he gets defeated by others, but he doesn't get convinced by others. So he doesn't waver. So he's more or less Nishta or whatever. And the third one is profoundly knowledgeable of scripture. And not only he doesn't waver, he convinces others as well. So all this takes place within sadhana bhakti, vaidhi sadhana bhakti. And so let's say the Madhyama and the Uttama would there be Nishta or something like that.
You mentioned sadhaka, Mahana Bharata, sadhaka. What is the difference? Sadhaka means, for understanding, is a beginner.
No, anyone, Akanta Bhava is sadhana, sadhaka.
That doesn't do anything with it, sadhana bhakti.
Yeah, sadhana bhakti, one who does sadhana is called a sadhaka. When he gets bhava, then he's no longer doing sadhana bhakti.
So, suppose, if one, what I'm telling about in our ISKCON, that one advance up to bhava level and after that he comes down again. And what about then? In the meantime.
Comes down in the sense of falling.
I'm not saying the fall down. It comes down to the lower level from the bhava stage.
Which means what?
Means sometimes, sometimes they are not following any rules, regulations. But once he came up to a bhava stage.
Yeah.
Okay.
And he saw the Lord.
So now there he is not following any rules, regulation. Okay. So the what about him? Suppose in the meantime when he came up to the bhava stage, that time he got some opportunity to take disciple. Okay. So he took some disciple also, but now what happened? By some godmaster something, I don't know, but they came down. Need to make it or something. So what about them? But those he took some disciple also, but from the this Guru Puja we know that Sakshudana is a Janma Janma devotee. That's meaning that he took it disciple. Okay, this is not for this life. He has some responsibility. Life after life, he'll be the disciple of that Guru. Now he was acting as a Guru here. But now what happened due to some material attachment, he came down from that position. In the meantime, how to see?
Well, life after life?
Yeah, because Sakshudana is a Janma.
Well, then again, and the next lifetime, maybe the Guru is a Guru again. Who knows?
Yeah, he'll be the Guru, same.
Yeah, so then he recovers sometime later on, as Bharat recovered.
Yeah.
So then he can recover in some future lifetime, and the disciple also can take him again in a future lifetime.
So there is no fault.
Of course, it doesn't mean that exactly that one gets the same guru every lifetime. Obviously not. Huh? Because we see the case of, Dolomongo. His guru was the prosecutor, whatever like that. Whatever, but so at least the idea is that in non-diksha guru at least, but in some sense, anyone who contributes to one's spiritual progress, obviously, from that point, you have some sort of relationship with that person eternally. It's not that they become the Diksha Guru every lifetime, otherwise, what to do, you're bound in the material world forever. And the Guru has to come back in the material world forever. So, doesn't mean that, but obviously, there's a spiritual relationship established, and a spiritual relationship is eternal. So that can manifest in the material spiritual world also.
in terms of accepting service to another Vaishnava in the spiritual world. So that sense is eternal. So what happens in the meantime, someone takes initiation, the person falls or whatever, that of course is the material world. But in the long term, we can say there's eternal relationships.
But there is also provision of rejecting the Guru.
Yeah.
In case there's certain...
If the Guru goes into a state of complete offensive mentality and rejecting the Vaishnavas and the philosophy and the Supreme Lord, etc., and he's no longer a Vaishnava, then you must reject. Because otherwise you get influenced by that relationship and you also end up in the same position.
So
one who's in Bhava cannot do that because he's seen the Lord. The Lord will never allow him to that position. So as in the case of Bharat, yes, he got a low birth, but he remembered the Lord completely and he met as a deer. Next lifetime, to his benefit, then he was even more fixed up than as Bharat. So it was for his own advantage. So the Lord takes care of those devotees on Bhava.
So which means, mind, in case of such a fall down, it is never offensive. It could be a material attacker, but never offensive.
Yeah.
What would the disciples ask? He has to take initiation or he just continue this
Guru's. It depends, as I said, if it is a fall down in which the Guru rejects Vaishnavism, then one should reject that Guru completely.
Yes, again take the positive.
Yeah.
But I heard that the Guru is in good standing, he is taking initiation. Yeah. That connects him to the Lord.
Yeah. But yeah, of course, the other idea is that if one feels that particular person one doesn't want a relationship anymore, in that case then one can reject completely and take a reinitiation or whatever like that. In the case of another person, they may not feel like that, so they don't have to.
Maharaj, the demigods are able to see the Lord. Demigods are able to see the Lord. Are they at the stage of bhava because like they have a material body, but they are still able to
It depends. Sometimes they cannot see the Lord. For instance, the Brahma has to go to the middle of the ocean and pray, and he doesn't see him,
sometimes
he just hears him. He doesn't even hear him, see him.
Yes.
So he may appear sometimes as a matter of pastimes, like the Lord appears and demons see him in the material world. So simply seeing the Lord as an avatar or whatever, that's not bhava stage. So even Hiranyakasipu saw that it wasn't a bhava stage, it's the mercy of the Lord. So when the Lord appears, and not necessarily when it's fully qualified with bhava,
more about the consciousness of the person.
Yeah.
About the devotion of kings, we see even Prataputta so much devotion even from the beginning of his life. But Mahaprabhu was not very favorable to himself.
Yeah.
Despite his devotion of quality, Mahaprabhu was not
Prataputta. That is simply as a matter of the conduct of a sannyasi. That a sannyasi should not associate with kings and worldly people. So for that reason he was hesitant to do so in the beginning, that's all. But when he understood his great devotional nature, then he allowed him. No, this claim that it was due to the influence of previous aparads. So the aparads influenced one even in bhava stage and caused negative effects on him. It's not mentioned, but not seva, probably not seva aparads, probably some other aparad. And those aparads only get destroyed in the bhava stage, whereas the results of sins in general are destroyed at a sakti stage. They're all gone. So it cannot be due to sinful activities at all, normal sinful activities. So only the influence of aparad continues in the bhava stage.
In one of the translations, Prabhupada mentions Haridwar. But as we see now, Haridwar and Gandaki River are quite far apart. As of today, Haridwar and Gandaki River are quite far apart.
Yeah.
But they mentioned it one in the same place.
The same place? Oh, maybe it's a geographical mistake. Mentioned Haridwar?
In 8th text.
Haridwar? Where?
In 8th text 8.
Oh, was this situated in Haridwar? Oh. Yeah, that's not mentioned in the actual Kulaha Ashram Parivraja, that's all it says in Haridwar. Yeah, and that's Haridwar refers to the whole area up there, I'm not sure, but no, it's not there. It's the Haridwar is stuff in northern India, where that's way over there in Nepal on another river, completely Haridwar is quite separated.
And here Yamuna now, near Kaligarh, okay, Yamuna was near Kaligarh, almost a few kilometers away from Kaligarh, Vrindavan.
Yeah. Well, I don't think you can do that with these rivers. they're different rivers anyway. Yeah, the Gandaki River is completely different. Actually, it joins somewhere. Where does it join? In Bihar somewhere? It joins into the Ganga at that point somewhere. But it's a whole different route.
The people shadow and dogs, the people. So is the lesson from Bharat Maharaj actually they are very careful?
Well, it's possible. Anything is possible. In this case, it was that attachment was unexpected, because normally that's not the normal attachment that would arise, you know. So it's a little bit unexpected. So it obviously means that in any case, all of one has to be aware of all attachments.
Suppose the devotee in a goshala keeps attaining the cows.
If one becomes overly attached, yes, and then we think of those things as a material attachment, then yes. And of course, we can think of the cow spiritually, that is a servant of Krishna, then better.
Oh.